Welcome to the Star Coalition Podcast. Today we sat down with Dr. Rishi Kakkar. He is the Principal Investigator and Associate Medical Director for Siegel Trials. Dr. Kakkar received his medical degree from Albany Medical College. There he earned many, many awards, including the American Academy of Neurology Award for Excellence in Neurosciences. His postgraduate residency training included medical internship at Drexel University St. Peter's University Hospital. He also went on to get his psychiatry training at Georgetown University School of Medicine. In the final year of training, Dr. Kakkar was selected for a clinical fellowship at the National Institutes of Mental Health. Over the years, he has successfully published in reputable scientific journals and presented at numerous scientific meetings. Today, Dr. Kakkar will talk about the work of a principal investigator, discuss the placebo response, give a historical perspective of research, and discuss the importance of viewing volunteers as heroes. So let me just start out with a basic question.
What does a principal investigator do?
So, I mean, that's actually a good question because the title suggests that we are a principal, we're investigating. So mainly a job of a principal investigator truly is to investigate and be responsible for the whole conduct of the study throughout the study, from its inception all the way to the recruitment of the patients, to the actual coordination of the study, management of the patients or volunteers that are in the study, all the way to the end of the study and capturing all the information, clinical information as well.
Sounds like a very complex process.
It is, but it's a lot of fun, and it's actually, if you have a good team of people around you like I do, it does make it much more productive as well.
Well, how did you get into this, into the research field? What kind of brought you to this point?
Yeah, this was a little bit by serendipity, actually. I was a resident at Georgetown in D.C., and my interest was purely in psychopharmacology at that time. And while I was in the fourth year, I was offered a position at the National Institutes of Health to do a clinical research fellowship. So one of my mentors sort of took me there with her when she moved to NIH, and that was the first time I was truly exposed to the clinical research process. And while I was there, it was really interesting to be among all these scientists working on different psychopharmacological agents, working on different drugs, things in development, thinking outside the box. And that's when your eyes sort of lit up and said, wow, you know, yes, we are treating the patients, but there's an other side to it. The way the drugs actually get on the prescription pad and then to the patient has a huge process behind it. And I think that's the process that really enticed me and caught me, and I've been on it since then.
So what do you do as far as the work on a daily basis, just to kind of give people an idea? What is it that the kind of engagement you have with staff, the kind of engagement you have with some of the patients that you work with?
Sure. And the daily duties really are quite varied, but they really depend upon the clinical study that we are conducting. But to sort of give a synopsis of how the day sort of really proceeds is, so we were working in the clinical trial arena, both in outpatient as well as inpatient settings. So I'm at both locations in a day. And so generally the day would start with going and rounding on the potential volunteers who are admitted to an inpatient unit, seeing them on a daily basis, recording notes on them, assessing them clinically, and then moving to the research office and working with the team of the coordinators and the psychologists to make sure all the information is input correctly, communicating along the team as to how the subjects are doing. And then moving on to the outpatient setting where the different clinical trials have been conducted in all different therapeutic areas. So, and that's the greatest part about the job. There's no one volunteer that's exactly like the second volunteer. I could be seeing a patient with depression followed by a patient with stable schizophrenia, and who both have different needs, who are both on investigational drugs, and who both need that the visits to just assess how they're doing clinically. So the day really revolves around basically clinically seeing the patients, the volunteers, assessing them really carefully, and then also communicating with your clinical staff, your psychologists, and your coordinators to make sure that all the assessments are being done properly.
it seems like a huge thing to coordinate with so many different areas within your industry or within the work that you do. What are some of the challenges that maybe you see on a daily basis with the work that you're doing, and what are some things that sometimes you find are great challenges?
That's a good question, because like I mentioned, that the no 2 days sometimes can be alike. And that actually is a mixed blessing in a lot of ways. It's actually the greatest part of this, you know, this responsibility as well. But there are, you know, these are the patients, the volunteers who are coming in, who are coming in into the clinical trials voluntarily, and their whole care depends upon, at that point, our assessment of them. And also on top of that, we're also monitoring them on a weekly basis. So a lot of it, I think, revolves around managing them and managing their expectations about what a clinical study process involves. A lot of the volunteers are used to just going to a physician quickly, seeing them, getting their medication, and then coming back a month later to see how they're doing. Well, the research is quite different, and I think that brings a little bit of a challenge with it. And still seeing these, you know, volunteers on a regular basis, on a weekly basis, assessing them, still providing care to them without being too caring to them. And that's a fine sort of a balance between the two, because in research setting, you are avoiding, you're really trying not to inject the placebo response. And I think that challenge is something that, you know, most of the sites, most of the investigators sort of wrestle with when they're wearing a clinical hat in their offices, but then they're also wearing a hat as an investigator where they're caring for the patient without injecting that placebo response as well.
The term placebo response. Yeah. Is used all the time in conversations.
Sure.
And can you just expand maybe for people that don't know a lot about what that is? What is the placebo response? And because there may be people that don't really even understand what that is.
No, actually, I'm glad you asked that question, because we do use that terminology quite a bit in research. So a placebo is basically sort of, in a layman term, is considered a sugar pill, which is a particular drug that looks just like the drug but does not have an active drug inside it. It is sort of, if you may, is an empty sort of pill that looks just like a research pill. We use that in these clinical studies because, number one, for a couple of reasons. Number one, we found earlier on when these studies were conducted that there's an immense power of the mind to believe that they're getting the medication once they are, and improve psychological scores. So if a particular volunteer who comes in with depression believes they're definitely getting the medication, they tend to get better to some extent. So it really makes it difficult to see whether the response that the patient had, or the response of the depression, improved because of the study drug that they received, or because of their own expectations about that they would get better. So to eliminate that is where this placebo-controlled trials came out, where the volunteers are given all the information in advance. They are told in a very simple fashion that, yes, there is a likelihood that you may get the real medication, or you may get something called a placebo, which is exactly the same looking pill, but it will not have an active medication inside it. You will not know what you're getting, and we tell that to all of our volunteers, and neither will we. And this way, we're all kept completely so-called blinded to the study process. And that helps us identify, is the effect that the patient is experiencing is truly the effect of the medication, or does it have something to do with their own expectations of what, whether they should get better or not?
That's a great explanation. What is it that, what are some things that kind of drive you on a daily basis? Because, I mean, you get to have face-to-face contact with all the patients or subjects or volunteers that you have, mm-hmm. And the staff. What are some things that kind of just drive you and bring you satisfaction on a daily basis, being able to do your work?
Oh, I think this has been actually one of the more fulfilling parts of my career so far. It really, seeing the process unfold in front of you for a couple of reasons. One, there is a global picture that's very satisfying here, which is that knowing that the work that you're doing today in its infancy may yield an effect to a greater population later on down the road. And this makes me think in hindsight to all the drugs that are approved for depression currently, for example, you know, Prozac, Zoloft, just to name the few, were studied in a similar fashion. And here they are now benefiting immense number of patients. So to know that I am a small part of that process And knowing that I'm seeing these patients on a daily basis with that, I think it provides an immense fulfillment knowing that that is the case here. And the second thing I think really is that more than in a clinical practice where you're seeing the patients, you are following an algorithmic approach a lot of time to just giving them the medication. Here you really get to assess the subjects, assess the volunteers, see them on a much more frequent basis, also assess them medically, get to know their caregivers. There is a holistic part of the research that is not often seen in a clinical practice. And I think that part is really fulfilling. And I think my staff would probably say the same thing as well.
Can you expand maybe on that for someone who may be considering research as a possible option? What does that mean, a holistic approach? I mean, what are some components of what you see could be a holistic approach in the research?
Sure. And I think by holistic, what I mean is not simply just patient coming in and us assessing them purely on their symptoms and giving them the medication. Here, for example, when a particular volunteer comes in for research, we assess them medically. Even as a psychiatrist, we are assessing them from a point of view of their biological state. So we're looking at their blood work, we're looking at their EKGs. We are also assessing them socially. So we are looking at all of their social factors. Their caregivers are often involved in this process with us as well. And on top of that, we are also looking at them not as a simple boxed, just a DSM criteria for depression, but rather a very thought out process that gives you very quantifiable results. It actually gives a number to the disease state, which we can track over time. So you're looking at them from a family perspective, you're looking at them from the medical perspective, and then you are also looking at them longitudinally in time as well.
How can you see that expand in the future?
And by this, you're referring specifically to research settings?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think you'll see that the lot of way the studies are written these days, a lot of the companies who are asking our investigators to participate in these clinical trials are really looking at very rigorous measures to make sure that the particular volunteers who are coming in are looked at every angle. For a couple of reasons. Number one, they want to ensure that the information they're collecting from these potential volunteer is not just limited to just one end of whether it's working or not, but rather they want to collect whether they could collect information on some genetic marker they may have later. They may want to collect information about their living situation, how that may impact the trial per se. So I think I see it actually growing even more. Some people call it complexity, but I think in a bigger scheme of things, it's actually a much more holistic sort of approach in that you are looking at every angle of that particular volunteer's life and seeing if there are variables that are affecting it. And this way, in the future, you go back and you look at that particular subject and you look at all the information there, and you're able to hopefully extrapolate some more information about the drug based on that situation. So I think this is the way I see the clinical studies moving in the future as well.
What are some of the changes that you've seen that you've thought, wow, this is a really progressive move in this industry, and maybe where would you like to see things go in the future of research?
Yeah, and actually we have given this question quite a bit of thought because the industry has rapidly changed over time. You know, and I actually recently was presenting to one of the community organizations, and the one of the things that I like to do is paint a historical timeline as to where the research has come from. And you think about where it came from, all the way from the Tuskegee experiments, all the way to the Nuremberg Code, and now here we are in the modern day era of, you know, the FDA regulations. So from just purely from an ethical perspective, the research has really grown and really gone in a progressive fashion, where it's gotten tremendously volunteer-centered, where the lot of power is given to the volunteers and the information is given to them prior to them joining the trial or even in continuing in the trial. So that's from more of that perspective. Now from the medical perspective, I'm seeing a lot of the research actually changing in the way they are designing the study designs. A lot more companies are interested in the medications are providing, for example, much more longer term, open label, they call them, right after the particular study is completed. And not only that, they're often much, much more open to our input into how those protocols are designed over time. So I think what we've seen is both from the ethical perspective, both from a medical perspective, the studies really have grown. And where I see it going in the future truly is that you'll see that we are going to develop a lot more what they call biomarkers, which will help us hopefully identify the type of patient that responds to a medication. Companies are already collecting that information in their blood draw when they do the blood draw. So someone's particular inflammatory markers, which will show that they have a lot of inflammation, is high, they may be more likely to respond to a certain drug. So I think I always tell the volunteers that join us, you're doing a great service to this. You are going to be one of those that is helping us identify, creating a bank of that information, which we can use to start specifying even more and getting a more targeted therapies. So I think we're seeing the future of the therapies getting even more targeted, which will actually only translate much better into clinical practice.
What do you say to maybe other people who are thinking about going into research? What is it that you would like them to know about maybe the impact that they're making?
Yeah, I think that's probably the most pertinent question when it comes to, you know, anyone who's trying to decide to get into research. I mean, what I would say to that is for any particular person, any particular individual thinking about it, that they should think of research in two ways. One, they should think of it from an individual way, and one more from a global way. From an individual perspective, I think what it really provides to them is an option. I always say research is an option. You know, it is an option available to you if you are not happy with your current options, and if you would like to have a little bit more in-depth information about yourself as to how this particular, if you would improve on a new type of a medication, a novel mechanism. So just that alone sometimes is enough for a lot of volunteers to know that, you know, I've tried a couple of things, they haven't worked. I'm going to be involved in a process that will actually, I'm going to go on a regular basis. My medical workup will be done as well. And I will hopefully be able to improve, though we always tell them no guarantees in that perspective. Then I think the second thing I tell them all is for a global picture, which is what we talked about a little bit before. And in this, I think the caregivers of the and the family members become really important as well. We're taking a research as a much more broader sort of look at and saying that I'm going to be involved in a process that's really going to help generate information that's going to be given to and hopefully help majority of population out there. And I think I do that to a lot of volunteers that come in when we talk about the other drugs that have been approved in the past, as to how many potential volunteers were a part of that process, how many it took to get the information. And for one of the things I mentioned to you is, you know, these drugs are as good as the volunteers who give the information about them. So the information they provide is crucial in grabbing any information we can to see if they work or not. So their words matter so much in our field that I always encouraging them that if you have a voice, this is your way to voice that voice when you come into a research process.
I'd like to thank Dr. Rishi Kakkar, Principal Investigator and Associate Medical Director at Siegel Trials. To learn more about Dr. Kakkar and his incredible work, visit www.siegeltrials.com. And thank you for joining us again on the Star Coalition podcast, where we talk with leaders in mental health treatment, advocacy, research, and recovery. Be sure to visit us at www.thestar.org, that's thestarr.org, where you can join discussions shaping the CNS world. We'll see you again soon.